When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Okay, so what is Dr. Bear actually about? This will be a good opportunity for me to practice that elevator pitch for it and send out another signal to people who haven't checked out The Inscrutable Dr. Bear in the Case of the Two-Faced Statue at drbear.com. Spelled doctor, all spelled out, D-O-C-T-O-R, and bear spelled B-A-E-R, not B-E-A-R. Flip the two vowels in the middle. And that's where you'll find sample pages and a synopsis of the book. Not a synopsis, but like a teaser for like what the book's about. But this is what I've been telling people, and I don't think this gives any spoilers to it. The elevator pitch is, he is a character in a fantasy world that heroes take their cursed treasures to. Hero goes on a journey, they encounter all sorts of monsters, they get various gifts from the gods and from, you know, conquering different adversaries. And you're Perseus, you got the Gorgon head. What do you do with the Gorgon head when you're done defeating the Kraken? Now, I know that there was, I think it got put on Athena's shield or something in the actual mythology, but as a kid watching Clash of the Titans, my first thought was, what's he going to do with that head when he's done? If he puts it in the closet, you know, if he has a kid, the kid's going to find it in the closet. I find all sorts of things in closets. I don't want to find a Gorgon head to get turned to stone, right? So that was the genesis of the sort of what began the investigation that led to The Inscrutable Dr. Bear was, I wanted to figure out who would be a fantasy figure that these heroes could say, like, look, I got this Gorgon head. I don't know what to do with it. You know, well, I'll keep it safe in my house, right? And if you have a collection of that nature, that means every ill-meaning figure in that fantasy world is going to want into your house. And you can put up all sorts of defenses. But if everybody's trying to get in, somebody's going to get in. And somebody does. And when they get in, they cause an accident that releases all of these cursed objects back out into the world. So poor little scholarly Dr. Bear, who's never been on an adventure, has to go out to get them back. Only to find out that when he finds them back out in the world... Remember, heroes bring it to him. He's never found them in the world, right? He's not Indiana Jones in that way. The heroes bring him the stuff. So now he's finding it in its natural habitat. He discovers the cursed objects or something else altogether. So that was a little bit of a lengthy version of the elevator pitch of the book. That's the aboutness that I'm telling people when they ask what it's about. And I've wanted to do this book, like this is another thing I tell people, is I've really wanted to do this book for about, you know, a little over 20 years. But that sounds like I had the book figured out 20 years ago. What I mean by that is that I had an intuition about this character, this little bear in a suit, 20 some odd years ago. And my evidence for that is that he appeared on the cover of PPV pay-per-view number 2, my first miniseries that was published by Antarctic Press in September of 2002. And I will put an image of this in the notes for the episode. And I started just enjoying doodling this little bear in a suit on notepads in my sketchbook, and I knew that there was something to him that he was just very charming and appealing. And I thought, someday I'll figure out who this guy is and I'll make a story about him. And it wasn't until around 2000, well, actually, no. He started appearing in the backgrounds of various comics that I made in the years subsequent to 2002. Like in my first self-published graphic novel, The Front Rebirth, he actually had a speaking role in the sense that he was a stuffed plushie that a character used to do a little puppet play with in the episode. His name was Marmalade Bear, and he did a little stage show in the supervillain headquarters. It was a jokey bit of business. So he started showing up in cameos throughout my stuff, but I didn't have a sense of who this character was. I just loved drawing this little bear. Around 2010, I decided, and this is around the same time that I did my first Boulder and Fleet mini-comic, and I really made this shift back to doing anthropomorphic or clothed animal character comics and really finding myself at home doing that. I decided, I want to figure out what this guy is, and I want to do a short story about him. And the idea of cursed objects came up pretty quickly. I was like, he's going to have something to do with cursed objects, because the thought occurred to me, like, wouldn't it be cool to find a way to do Doctor Strange style mysticism or even like supernatural horror with cute little Hello Kitty style characters. That was the genesis of it. Now, not to find the irony in it, not to be like, oh, this is genuinely horrifying and inappropriate for children, but with cute characters. No, I want to make this a kind of spookiness that's accessible to young people, because this has been something that's important to me throughout my entire career. Since I was 19 years old, I've always wanted to make comics for young people. But I wanted to find a way to, I wanted to play with the aesthetic of cuteness and spookiness slash leaning a little bit into horror to see what would come out. Because one of my interests in entertainment is I really love supernatural horror. Things like John Carpenter's The Fog. That's one of my favorite horror films. I know it's not a perfect horror film, but what I love about it is the atmosphere, the mystery, the ambiguity of what the ghosts are exactly. I don't know, the ambiguity gets lifted towards the end of the movie. I've made no secret about my love of the movie The Prince of Darkness, another Carpenter film. I talk about that a lot in various podcasts. Movies like The Horror Express, where it's people trapped on a train with this weird sort of the thing like alien taking people over. And I was thinking about like, what are the common elements of the kinds of supernatural? It's like, it's interesting to me that I don't really care for like slasher movies, like Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, it's fine. I'm not going to go to it like, oh, you know what I need to watch right now is that. But Horror Express, I'll watch that any day of the week. I love that movie. And I was trying to think, well, what is the common denominator of these? And a lot of these types of supernatural horror shows or films, it's usually like a scholar or a priest or some kind of educated everyman who is fighting against ancient, implacable entities, right? Impossibly powerful things. And it's just these weak little mortals with just, you know, a little bit of knowledge and hope who are facing them. And in, you know, in the case of The Fog and in The Prince of Darkness, it ends kind of ambiguously and kind of badly for a lot of characters. Horror Express ends a little bit better, but man, a lot of people get wrecked up in that movie. So another thing that I think about is a television show that I loved as a middle schooler, which was Friday the 13th, the series, which has nothing to do with Jason Voorhees. It was a Fox television show about three people in an antique shop that they inherited, which contains a whole, like every antique in there is cursed. And the previous owner was selling these antiques to people, very monkey's paw, like here's, oh gosh, what was one of them? It was some kind of blood draining apparatus that doctors used in the 1800s, but it was cursed so that like it would actually suck the intelligence out of people and turn them into human vegetables, and then it would return the intelligence into another person. And so the person who owns it was like stealing the intelligence of lots of other people. It was a monster of the week show where these three people, these normal people, just like, you know, everyday men and women, go out into the world to try to reclaim these cursed objects from people who are using them for bad things after having purchased them or acquired them from the previous owner of the shop. So, you know, haunted ventriloquist dummies, things like that. And I love that show. I went back and watched some episodes recently, and it's still pretty good, but it does show its age. It's very much a late 80s television show in the early days of Fox television. But I still have a ton of fondness for it. So I think that was another big influence on this idea. Is like, I want my little hero, my little bear, to be a scholar. He doesn't have any powers of his own. And like Indiana Jones, he goes out into the world to get dangerous artifacts from ancient places. And there's other treasure hunters who are always, you know, thwarting him or chasing him. And this is another influence when I talk about, when I think about this is Lupin the Third, right? Lupin the Third is of the stories I've read and seen in film, he's on some caper and then he discovers an even darker thing, a more evil thing than what he's up to. And he winds up having to do the right thing to thwart the bigger evil while trying to evade Inspector Zenigata. That was another influence too. I wanted it to have like a chase element, a sort of like a caper element, not grave robbing, but sort of like a treasure seeking element. And there would be something supernatural about each individual item. And the first mini comic I did back in, I want to say it was like 2015 or something like that, had him on a quest to claim like a certain number of objects. There was like 417 cursed objects he had to get, and then they would get the final object. So it would have like a countdown kind of thing going on. But to tell you the truth, I had no idea where that came from or where I was going with that. It was just, it was sort of like trying to put like a countdown timer on the concept so that tune in next week to find the next monster of the week. And it wasn't until around 2019, I want to say it was 2019, maybe 2018, that I was grocery shopping at a Meijer big box store, kind of like a Walmart in the Midwest. And the idea finally occurred to me what the cursed objects really were. And I quickly knelt down. I jotted down a piece of paper. I have the piece of paper. I'm going to include it in some kind of like sort of commentary file for the book when it finally hits stores. But then I realized, okay, now I have a graphic novel. Now I can actually tell like a large story about this. But those were the influences. It was my attraction to cute animals being brave. An element I actually haven't covered in this is I also have been fascinated for, gosh, going on 20 years now, the idea of how can I explore exciting action without glamorizing or high-fiving violence. While I'm not hiding it, I'm not turning away from it. I'm showing that violence is a scary and dangerous thing, but at the same time, not celebrating. And this is another reason why I don't really go in for like the slasher movies. Like, I'm not excited about the kills. Like, what happens to Kevin Bacon in Friday the 13th Part 1 is not that thrilling to me. It's kind of gross. So, but in supernatural kind of environments, there's something that's kind of like elevated and mythical about it and doesn't feel quite as grotesque to me. I think it's because it's not people doing it. It's like a concept doing it. But anyway, so there was the fascination with doing exciting action without celebrating violence, my fascination with super cute characters, very visually appealing, simple characters who have an anthropomorphic clothed animal thing, and can I bring in my love of supernatural horror into this thing too? So it's the convergence of the three things that I really, really enjoy. And as for what it's about emotionally, that's up to you when you read it. And I hope this has been interesting to you enough that it makes you want to go ahead and order the book. And that's at drbear.com. So I think that's all for this time. I'm going to start doing some breakdowns of the individual characters and explaining how I see them and where they come from now that I've got the sort of like the headline of the book out of the way. So I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember everybody.
In today's adventure, Stanlin was trapped in an old dark building. He had to face many dangers, from demons to monsters. Now, in your world, there are no demons or monsters, but there's still danger in old dark places. Empty buildings or caves may seem exciting, but you could get badly hurt or trapped in places like that. So stay out of them, even if one of your friends dares you to go in. Taking a risk like that isn't brave. It's just dumb.